What's up, Kings fans? If you haven't heard about Anchor by Spotify, it's the easiest way to make a podcast with everything you need all in one place. Let me explain. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. When hosting on Anchor, you can distribute your podcast on listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And best of all, Anchor, it's totally free. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone. The 45-year drought is over. The Los Angeles Kings are indeed the Kings of the National Hockey League. They are the 2012 Stanley Cup champions.
Cleared away by the Kings, picked up by Martinez. Martinez to Clifford, feeds it right side to Foley with a shot. Save, rebound, score! Alec Martinez has won the Stanley Cup for the Los Angeles Kings, and royalty reigns again in the NHL.
Hey, what's up, Kings fans, and welcome to the Hockey Royalty Podcast, the unofficial podcast of RinkRoyalty.com. I'm Scott Kinville, and before we get going, as usual, we want to let you know you can find us on social media. You can find us on Twitter at RinkRoyalty and also at Royalty_pod, and you can find us on Facebook at the Hockey Royalty Podcast. We have got a great show lined up for you tonight. We are got a guest here that was a part of one of the biggest moments of LA Kings history. But before we get to our guests, I want to bring in our all-star panel for tonight. As usual, riding shotgun with me, we got the Thunder and Lightning team. First of all, I'm going to bring in the straw that stirs the drink, our fearless leader, Mr. Ryan Sykes. What's going on, Ryan?
Hey, Scott. Doing well. Excited for tonight.
Absolutely. Me too. Can you tell?
Yeah. You're yelling into the mic.
I know, right? I'm ready to go, man. And also, I want to bring in the Thunder, the man who's out there in that warm California sun making everything all kinds of fun, the one, the only, Mr. Russell Morgan. What's happening, Russ?
What's going on, guys? This will be a fun pod. I'm excited for this one.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I can barely contain myself, so I better keep talking before I explode all over the place here. And also joining us tonight, another one of our Rink Royalty colleagues, joining us from the Great White North, the beautiful city of Toronto, Ontario, I believe, correct?
Yes, that was correct.
Mr. Ryan Colley. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm very good. Thank you. Yes, I'm very excited to have Colin Fraser on. And I know it's only May, but... But my Red Sox were on top of the AL.
Yeah,
so.
Oh, yeah. There you go. I see that.
Yeah, that's right.
And yeah. Don't forget, Manny, our producer, is a Yankee fan too, so he can mute you at any time. That's what?
Scott, you as the host, let me know.
So, anyways, notwithstanding all this Boston Red Sox talk, because we are an LA Kings podcast, you know. So, anyway, I'm going to bring in the man of the hour. I want to bring in our guest. Like I said, he was part of one of the biggest moments of LA Kings history, if not the biggest moment. I want to bring in Mr. Colin Fraser. Colin, how you doing?
Doing well, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for coming on. We really appreciate it.
So, Colin, just want to jump right in. Well, by the way, you're one of the biggest moments of the Blackhawks history, too. I see your sweater on.
Oh, yeah.
He's wearing a Blackhawks.
Yeah. Colin. So, drafted in the third round by the Flyers in 2007. Just kind of walk us through what the draft process was like for you, what kind of interest the Flyers showed in you, any other teams that showed interest in you.
Yeah. So, going back, 18-year-old season, big season. You kind of just play, right? And then as the season goes, you're getting interviewed by teams. And there wasn't all the social media platforms, et cetera, back in the day. So I couldn't follow along with the 700 lists that people put out now. So I didn't really know where I was going to fall. So I went to the draft. It was in Nashville, Tennessee. I figured somewhere in the mid second round is kind of where I had myself slated based on really nothing other than that's just what I thought or where I thought I should go. And I start getting into, so back then they did the first three rounds on the first day. So it was like a long day. So you sit there for the whole first round, and then you're into the second round. And I had to pee like so bad, but I didn't want to leave my seat. This is like 100% true. Nothing happened, but like if they call my name and I'm like, I'm the guy in the back. It's going to be really weird because the first round, not that I was going in the first round, but you're always like hoping so you can't leave your seat. And then you get in the seat, can't leave your seat. My name hadn't been called yet. And I was first pick in the third round. So 69th overall to Philadelphia. And oddly enough, I never even interviewed with Philly. I never even spoke a word to them. I don't know why to this day, but my theory is that I didn't think I was going to be around that late. And Philly didn't have a second round pick that year. They had two firsts, no seconds, and then the third. So I figured my theory is that they thought I'd be gone by the third round. Don't know if that's true or not, but that's my own personal theory. And oddly enough, I had a good buddy that played on Red Deer with me, Mossy Mariamaki's his name. And Boston's picking 66th. And I had a couple interviews with Boston, and Boston announces from the Red Deer Rebels, and I was half out of my seat, and they picked Mossy Mariamaki, and I had to sit back down because it wasn't me. But I went three picks later.
You jumped out of your seat because you had to pee, right?
Well, both. Do the whole table thing, and you meet everybody, and that was the first thing I did. I'm like, I really got to go to the bathroom here. So.
And I realized I said 2007. I meant 2003. I jumped a couple bullet points ahead, so I apologize for that.
2003. I'm a little bit older, yeah. Than
so you weren't running your name through Tankathon to see where you would land.
No. I cell phone. I know that back then. So
yeah.
You know what? After the draft, you go whoever the sponsor, maybe AT&T, and they had like a table of cell phones, and you could like call your family and friends from this table of cell phones because really none of us had cell phones back in that day. They're around, but I mean, I didn't have one. So, yeah, that's the story.
Then jumping ahead, 2004, February 2004, you get traded to the Blackhawks. I guess what was that like to kind of get traded so soon into your career?
You know, it didn't really matter. I'd gone to one camp with Philly, summer camp that year, and then rookie camp or whatever in September. And so I didn't really have any ties there, but we were riding the bus, Red Deer. I think we were going to Saskatoon, and Brent Sutter had a cell phone, this big Zach Morris type, like flip phone. Really big guys, really, really hilarious. Like you couldn't even store numbers in this thing, you know? And he called me up to the front of the bus because Paul Holmgren had called him, and Philly had traded me to Chicago for me and Jim Vandermeer for Alexei Zhamnov and a draft pick of some sort. And Alexei Zhamnov, it was like at the trade deadline for the NHL, and Alexei Zhamnov played the rest of that year with Philly and then never played with the Flyers ever again. And Jim Vandermeer went on to play, I don't know, 400, 500 NHL games. I played 350 or whatever it was. So I don't know if Philly wants a do-over on that one because they didn't win the cup. So, and then oddly enough, I get to the hotel, no cell phones. I had to wait in my hotel room, and Dale Tallon, like I had to wait, literally wait for the phone to ring. And Dale Tallon called the hotel and called my room just to welcome me to the team and stuff like that. So that's how, I'm not that old, but that's how old we're going back.
You didn't have to pee then though, did you?
Pardon me?
You didn't have to pee then though, right?
No. I was good. Right. I was good. Yeah. No, I was, all my nerves were out. I was good to go by then.
Just kidding.
So now we've arrived at the 2007 I mentioned earlier. You make your NHL debut for the Blackhawks, I guess. when did you kind of find out you were going to be in the lineup that night? And then also stemming off that, like, what kind of emotions were running through your head leading up to the moment that you stepped on the ice?
So it was the day before. I was in Norfolk playing with the Norfolk Admirals, and Al McIsaac, who was the GM in Norfolk at the time, called me with the good news. So I flew to Chicago that day. We played the next day. So pregame skate in the morning. Played Phoenix. How'd I feel? Really nervous, obviously, but like, I'm not a guy that gets like too wound up. I'm pretty like even keel kind of guy. So it's just like, all those, I guess, telling yourself to play your game and play the way you know or whatever. And I only played, I don't even remember, 5 minutes. Like, I didn't really play all that much anyway. But Jeremy Roenick was on Phoenix. So it was like my like welcome to the NHL moment, where it was like my eyes were this big, you know. Jeremy Roenick. So that was the first game. I don't have like a cool story, you know, like this big aha, like crazy story for my first game, but I certainly remember it, that's for sure.
Oh, I mean, you're certainly part of a team that was up and coming, especially taking Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane, and you're part of that Blackhawks team that started the dynasty. You know, at what kind of point did you start to realize that maybe this team was something special?
You know, when we, my third year in the minors, were in Rockford. I was still in Rockford, but the team was starting to trend. So it was like the back half of the year, they started making a push for the playoffs, and the arena was starting to sell out, really, 20,000 people, and they're going crazy. And they ended up missing the playoffs, but they made a really good push, and you could see it was starting to come. And the rest is history, really. It was sold out and has been ever since. If I go back to my first couple of years at camp, they would give us a stack of tickets for the exhibition games, and we were to like walk around the mall and give them away to whoever we wanted back in 2005, 2006. So from that to 2007, 2008, we're starting to sell out the rink every day. All these young, you know, Bufflin and Ladd and Keith and Seabrook and Boland and Brower and all these guys that we all played in the minors, Jalmerson, Crawford, and then they all just shuffled over to Chicago. And it was like, I don't know, a bunch of young, dumb kids really just having a lot of fun in the NHL.
And, you know, I mean, it's well documented. I said it many times on the podcast, but I live in the Chicago area, so I watch a lot of the Blackhawks games. I mean, one game that stands out for me during that the Cup run season, the first one, was when the Blackhawks were down 5-0 to the Flames and came all the way back. I think Seabrook scored in overtime. I think that's kind of when you kind of like take a step back and you're like, oh, wow, this team's actually really good.
It was like early in the year, early in the season too.
Yeah, in October, I think. Yeah,
no, I remember that well too. And I don't know, we kind of had this like group of guys that were like, we're so young and like maybe even a little naive, I don't know. And we just kind of, we just played. And Q was like he's such a good coach that he just like let us run too. Like he had structure, but he wasn't like pulling the reins back on guys, so guys could just play. And it just started like snowballing, right? Like starting to, I guess, trend and confidence and whatever else you want to call it. It was like, I don't know, I guess we wouldn't be denied. It was like, just rolled it right on through. Nothing fazed us. You know, you're down 5-0, you score, you know, you win. Like we're a strong willed team.
Yeah, and Ryan C just typed it, but I was gonna mention it as well. But look at what he's done for Florida, you know, in just a short amount of time.
He's really good, you know. Like he's people always ask. Like I've been fortunate to play for some really really good coaches. Daryl Sutter's great. Q is great. I had a guy by the name of Mike Havlin in the minors who was fantastic, who was the assistant in Chicago when we won. And Q just had like such a good feel for the game. So it was obviously first line, second line, third line, fourth line. But me as a fourth liner, if you're having a game your line's having a game, he just lets you run. So you might play 14 minutes. And if you're not having a game, then you don't play and you play 6 minutes. And he doesn't say anything to you either way. He doesn't yell at you when you're not good. He doesn't really say, oh, great job when you are good. It's just like, you just know. You know when a coach likes you based on how you're playing, how many minutes you play. Sorry, he controls it all. So that's what I, as a fourth liner, really liked about Q, because it wasn't like this, like, oh, you're a fourth liner, you're slotted for 8 to 10 minutes, and that's all you get, whether you're having the game of your life or the worst game you've ever played in your life. So gives you a lot of confidence as a player to be able to play at your best.
And then going to game six of the 2010 Cup Finals, obviously the ending was very anticlimactic, but just kind of walk us through, you know, Kane scores, what's going on from the bench? He's running towards Niemi at the other end. You know, what are you guys thinking?
Crazy, crazy, crazy. So I was, I didn't even play that game. Me, Adam Burrish, Brian Bickle were not dressed. And so we're, if you've been to Philly, it's like the locker room's like the visitor locker room, but then there's like this little, like, I don't know, closet of sorts that they'd make into a massage room. So we were up a goal late in the third, and Philly ties it with maybe 6 or 7 minutes left in the third. And we'd already started getting our gear on. So then we're doing the, oh crap, what are we going to do? So we didn't want the guys to see us, but the game's going into overtime. We didn't want to take our gear off. So we went and hid in this closet, for lack of a better term. And we just waited in there for the whole intermission. And we come back out, and the guys go out for overtime. And we're watching on this like little TV in the visitor's room. And then we didn't know if it was in or not. Kaner scores, same thing. We run to the bench and we like stop at the gate, because we're doing the, like, well, I kind of want to do the walk of shame off the ice if this is the goal. So we didn't really know what to do. So finally Burkat's like, screw it. And we just went out there and joined the pile. And thank gosh it went in, because I don't know what it would have been like to have to do the walk of shame all the way.
Oh my god, yeah.
It almost would have felt like you jinxed it, and then like scores. Oh my gosh. But we didn't have to worry about it. So and you know what? Kaner knew it was in. I think Soupy, Brian Campbell, there's a couple guys knew it was in, but like anyone on the bench, like no one knew that it was in. So that's why it was so like awkward and weird, but Kaner knew it was in the whole way. So
I think if you watch Patrick Sharp too, he knew it too.
You're right, Sharp. Yeah. He knew. They just knew. So that was weird.
Russell, you can go ahead.
All right, Colin. So yeah, after that, you get traded. So the next time you get traded over to Edmonton, and you get moved over to LA. When you come over to LA, I believe it was the 11-12 season, the cup season. When did you realize that you were coming over to like a pretty like well-built team, pretty young team as well? When did you realize that team was kind of ready to take the next step?
Well, I mean, having played against them, we knew they were good, right? And they lost to San Jose in the first round, maybe, as the year prior. And then like same thing, bottom feeder team that was starting to trend up. And I was in Edmonton, and then to go to LA and to back up, when I traded to LA, I had a broken foot. I don't know if you guys remember this.
But I do.
I'll tell the long saga story, because I love telling this story.
We love to hear it.
I had a broken foot and I get traded, and Ron Hextall calls me. I'm at Andrew Ladd's stag party in Penticton, BC, and he says, hey, we just traded for you, how's your ankle? I said, how's my ankle? My ankle's fine, my foot's broke. It was your foot's broken. They told us it was your ankle. I said, no, it's not my ankle, it's my foot. He goes, okay, we need you on a plane right now, you need to come down here today. I'm like, I don't have a passport, I can't come down here today, I'm out in Penticton. So I had to fly back to Redmond that day, pack up, grab my passport, fly down to LA the next day. I go straight to get a CT scan. A doctor who I've never met, but I meet him for the first time after a week from the CT scan. He says, you got a stiff, you got a broken foot, you need surgery, and you're not allowed to play. And I'm like, broke my foot in March with the Oilers. It's now July. So April, May, June, July. It's been 4 months. And now this guy's telling me I need surgery. So then we got into this whole, like, they're going to reverse the trade and they're going to buy Fraser out. And there's all these rumors. And I didn't even know if I was coming or going. I didn't know what was happening. I tell my wife, I don't know what was going. I got surgery the next week. So I went home, come back, get surgery. And the trade obviously broke through. And I came to camp, first day of camp was the first day I was cleared to even skate. So I'd gone since March to September, never doing a squat, not skating, because I couldn't. And LA had 14 forwards already under contract. So I didn't know what. I was like, I'm going to Manchester here. I don't know what's going to happen. Is it the numbers aren't lining up? I haven't played. I don't know what's going to happen. And I was bag skated every single day from the first day of camp right on through till mid-November. And I was like, it was awful, guys. I'm telling you, it was the worst time of my life. Because you couldn't play. Like, you couldn't play games. And you're just getting bagged by Jamie Compon, who is he's in good shape himself. But he do the skate fishing sometimes. But I go up to Dean's office about early November. I said, hey, Dean, I'm ready to play. I'm healthy. Whether it's here, whether it's Manchester, I don't care. I just want to play. And he says, give me 1 week. I said, okay. The next game, Scott Parse. You guys remember Scott?
Yeah, Scott Parse.
Oh, yeah.
So he blows his hip out. I don't think he played again after this. I mean, he tried to make a comeback and blew his hip out. Had they have season-ending surgery. I played the next night and I never missed a game the rest of the season. Nice. So I like feel really proud to tell the story to anyone who listened to me, because I was like this damaged goods player from the Oilers who were in 30th place and I could not play on their team, literally, like I was a healthy scratch, to, I don't know, 10 months later or 12 months later, and we're lifting the Stanley Cup with the team. So that's my fame story, for lack of a better term.
Nice, nice. And one quick thing, Colin, I think your mic is a little muffled. So I don't know if you're...
Oh, sorry, I might have
been. No, you're covered. Good. Sounds good now. But yeah, so if we like I mentioned, you kind of joined this young rambunctious Kings team, and Andre Kopitar obviously kind of cemented himself, and Dustin was the captain at the time, and Drew Doughty was kind of making a name for himself, kind of making your way through that cup run. When did you kind of midway through the season kind of realize that okay, this team had kind of the chance to kind of take it all the way?
It's kind of a, I don't know if there's a moment. I mean, because they fire Terry, who Terry was great, because Terry gave me a chance to play back in November. Like, I was a fan of his, but I was new. Like, I didn't know anything really, any different. And the team was struggling, as you know. We were out of the playoffs, in the playoffs, out of the playoffs. And Daryl took over in December. And from the trade deadline on, we just got hot. Like, we didn't win every game, but we were in every game, and we were getting points or OT losses or whatever the case may be. But we were starting to trend upwards. And we hit the playoffs, like, going on our way up, really. And then you win game one in Vancouver, and you just really start believing. And I think we lost game 82 that year, and that's what made us draw Vancouver. And it, like, didn't faze us. It was like we were just ready for the challenge, I guess. And, man, I don't know. The rest is history. A little bit of luck, a little bit of everything kind of going your way. It was just
– Jonathan Quick in net.
Jonathan, I mean, Quickie, so people ask, like, who's the best goalie? And like, Quickie, I mean, he doesn't win Vezinas every year and whatever. You look at the numbers. But, like, when the game is on the line, this guy is the best goalie. Like, if it's game seven, if it's a huge playoff game, you know that he's going to play his best game. It gives your team so much confidence, because it's like, we know Quickie's got us back here. Let's do our part up here. He's just a gamer. So, and he was hot that whole playoff. We don't win without him. No chance.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool to hear. Cause I mean, we talk about this all the time about Jonathan Quick being one of the best big game goalies in the NHL. So to hear it from an actual teammate's perspective, or, and then you played against him as well, that's just kind of cements that idea. But then kind of getting back in, now into the Stanley Cup Finals, game one against the Devils, you end up scoring the first goal. So kind of go through that emotion there.
Yeah, so prior to the game, so when I played at the Oilers, I scored three goals all year, and two of them were on Marty Brodeur in New Jersey. So it's like before game one, and I'm like, boys, listen up here. I've been known to not only score one, but two goals against Marty Brodeur in this building. They're all like, oh, sure, Fraz, yeah, good story. And then I scored in the first period on Marty Brodeur in that game. So I like to say I have Marty Brodeur's number, at least in that arena. So talk about like moments that you remember, like that's outside of winning the Stanley Cup. That's my biggest moment. It's bigger than my first game, bigger than my first goal. Something that really, really stands out in my mind. And that's something I won't forget, that one. I've watched that video a few times.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's pretty cool to say you're one of the few, I guess, who have the number against Martin Brodeur.
That's right.
But so then you guys win the Stanley Cup. Great moment. Great moment in Kings history, obviously. So then going into the next season, you guys make it back to the Western Conference Finals against your former teammates. Kind of run through that emotion there.
Yeah, Chicago, I mean, they knew, they just know how to win, right? And they had... But they beat us in five games that year. Like, they were just better than us. I don't know if we weren't – it's not like we weren't good. And that was a lockout year. That was the year they started the game, like, I don't know, 28-0 or whatever they were, 32-1 or whatever their streak was. And they just kind of had everything rolling for them. And I mean, no excuse other than they were a good team. And they had Brian Bickle stepping up. That's kind of when he kind of came alive. And Dunk and Shaw, I think, was a rookie that year. Like, they were a good team, and they just, plain and simple, just were better than us in that series.
Yeah, I mean, they were definitely a force to be reckoned with in 13. There's no doubt about it. But you know, I got to tell you, Colin, I've always liked Daryl Sutter, and I know he's got this reputation for being this gruff kind of, well, shall we say, miserable sometimes, I guess. But tell me, did he finally smile when you guys won the cup?
Oh yeah, his bark's bigger than his bite, guys. Let's put it that way. So, Daryl's not easy. Let's get something straight here. He's hard on players. Like, whether that's, I don't know, not so much yelling at, but like holding guys accountable and trying to get the best out of them. It's not always fun. Okay, but I think if you, at the end of the day, pulled all the guys in that room. I'm not saying they'd like every day, but we won Stanley Cups. So I think they would say they respect Daryl Sutter. And not that they liked playing for him every single day. I wouldn't blame anyone for that. But at the same time, he's a smart hockey guy. And you don't always have to, I guess, agree with the tactics, but they worked for us. He cares a lot, and he just wants to win. So might not line up with today's world and how we approach things, but I don't know, if you gotta have thick skin, you know. Like, what I liked about him is everyone is treated equally, so it didn't matter if you were Ronze Kopitar, John Quick, or Colin Fraser. They're the superstars, were treated the same as the fourth line grinders, and you got to pull your weight and you got to play well or you don't play, period.
Just real quick, Colin, were there any similarities between Coach Q and Daryl Sutter?
Similar and different. Like Q's like more of a player's coach, where he's like, he's really intense, but he's not so demanding and taxing on guys like directly. He's more of to the group versus the individual. But both are very simple. In my opinion, you can overcoach. Okay, so you in this year, in this time frame, you do this, but in this time frame, you do that, and then everyone kind of gets stuck in the middle, and one guy's doing this system and the other guy's doing that system, where it's like, it was black and white. That's it. This is how we forecheck, this is how we backcheck, this is how we play D zone, whatever the, and they're both very simple in that, different systems, but same concepts in that regard. And for me, that's how you get everyone on the same page. I mean, sometimes it can be overcomplicated, in my opinion,
with some coaching where it's where guys are kind of not on the same page. And it's not because they don't like each other. It's because there's too much going on, too many different options or systems.
Yeah, a little bit too much ability to freelance, I guess, right?
Yeah, and freelancing offensively is great, but I mean, you still need your got to let your skill guys be skill guys, but you still right. you need your structure within your game plan. You need your structure, and I mean, especially with Daryl, there's no gray area there. It was ABC, man, go, done. That's it.
So, absolutely,
and go you hard. Know,
yeah, yeah. Do not go anything less than 120%. Right?
Yes, exactly.
So you you actually played for Brent Sutter and Red Deer. So was there any contrast or similarities between those two? Yeah, and Daryl?
To a T, same guys. Like not same guys, different guys away from the rink, but same coaching, like very hard. And I said it before, I don't think and I've told it to Brent himself, I still see Brent around Red Deer all the time, and I don't think I'd play in the NHL without Brent. Because he just teaches you, and same thing. You don't have to agree with all the tactics, and maybe you can be too hard and yell too much. I get it. But I personally don't have an issue with it, and taught me how to be a pro and how to approach the game every single day like a pro, and how to pay attention to details, and how to be mentally ready for the game, before the game, the next game, over and over and over, being held accountable, attention to details, like all that stuff, like, I mean, I wasn't like the most skilled guy. I wasn't the fastest guy. I wasn't the biggest guy. So I had to rely on my compete level and my energy level and my grit. And I learned a lot from Brent in that regard.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, really just to wrap up with Daryl, I mean, just from a personal standpoint, my family and I met him out in Buffalo in 2017. And it was the day after the Kings just got absolutely blown out by the Sabres. And I'll tell you, for all the bad reputation he gets, he was the nicest gentleman in the world to my family. He was really great. So
he really yeah, is. He's just trying to motivate players and get the best out of them. And for some it works, and maybe for some it doesn't. But worked for me. Worked for the Kings, didn't it? I mean, you won.
It sure did. No doubt. So after 2014 was over with, you briefly went to St. Louis, and then you went over to Germany to play. So how was that? You know, playing over in Germany as opposed to playing in the NHL?
You know, first off, I loved it. I loved Germany. The league is an older league. It's I guess, comparable probably to the American League, but it's a bunch of old guys like myself that went over there instead of like young 20-year-olds. I suppose I could see my career kind of going, tailing the other way, or I wasn't going to be in the NHL anymore, so I wanted a new experience. And with that said, it had nothing to do with Germany, had nothing to do with anything that happened. It was like, I didn't last very long over there. I didn't want to play hockey anymore. I just didn't have the juice anymore, and the commitment and the passion for it. When you're revving the engine every year from 12 years old, all over and over and over and over. And the way I played, I couldn't really take a day off. It was like I was full throttle all the time, just because I was kind of always that bubble player on the edge, out of the lineup, in the lineup, in the American League, in the NHL. And I just didn't have it anymore. But Germany itself is awesome. And I wish I could have stayed longer, but I just had to. I didn't want to play anymore, so I hung them up.
Hey, great beer over there too.
It's true. Beer and sausage is true, and they do like it. Stereotypes are true to a certain degree, and they certainly, beer is cheaper than water. It's true, and we found a few beers and a few sausages, and we had some fun for sure.
Excellent.
Colin, is it true in Europe that they like their beer warm rather than cold?
I only drank cold beer, so I can't speak for overall, but I'd say this, the fridge, so it's Europe, right? So we had a small little fridge, you know, and you want to have guys over, you can't fill your fridge full of beers because you got food in there. It's not have room. So, and the beers are like a pint, you know, like they're not like like a little, you know, Bud Light can. It's like a real like glass, like pint. So like a picture, like a glass bottle beer, but like double the size or whatever.
Yeah.
it is. So it was always in the freezer, one in, one out. So sometimes it could be a little warm. Yeah, for sure it could be.
Well, and you know, and on a serious note, I mean, the DEL, the German Pro League, where it's just grown leaps and bounds. It really has. So
even since I've been there, yeah, come a long way. Some good young Germans are starting to come, right? And you see at the World Championships, like they got some players, they really do. And it's a big country, and they like sports. And oddly enough, though, the town I was in, Nuremberg, is it's a big city, but not a hockey city primarily. And there was only like my kid was 5 at the time, but we registered for like hockey there. And there's maybe 35, maybe 40 kids under the age of 8 that played in the whole city. So there's like 400,000 kids, people in the city. And like of those 40, like 6 or 7 of them were like North Americans like myself who had kids registered. So the point is there's not that many kids that play hockey. If you go up to Berlin and Mannheim and different cities, it's way more. They like hockey a lot more than where I was, but the point is, it's not like Canada where it's like, it doesn't matter. Everyone's playing, you know, like somebody's bound to be good when that many people are playing.
Right. Definitely. So once you were done with your playing career and now you are an amateur scout for the Chicago Blackhawks. So tell us how that came about.
Yeah. I retired from Germany. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was going to do some finance stuff and I don't know. Not something that I guess worked for me. And then I wanted to get back. Like I told you before when I retired, I was like, I'm done with hockey. I don't want to play hockey anymore. And then I started missing hockey. It's like, what do you know? And that's all I know. That's all I've known my whole life. I didn't even go to college. Like all I did was play hockey. So I started making calls to teams that I played on. So the Kings and people I knew and the Oilers and the Blackhawks, and then the Blackhawks had this opportunity. The guy that had my position prior took a GM position in the Western Hockey League with the Edmonton Oil Kings. So a spot just happened. I got lucky is what happened. And the spot opened up, and then the Hawks were grateful enough to give me the position, or at least try the position to see if I liked it and B, if they liked me. And I just love the job, guys. It's so good. And I didn't call the Blackhawks looking for an amateur scouting job. I was just like, hey, do you have anything? I'm just looking to get back into hockey. Like that's kind of how the conversation went. And here I am 1, 2, 3 years later. And then I signed a new contract to keep doing it for the next 3 years. So it's just a lot of fun, and I'm really happy and excited to be part of hockey again.
I understand you went down to Frisco for the U18s, and I know you can't talk about any specific players, but just what was that experience like after this whole last year of not being able to do anything, to go to a sporting event or be at the rink again?
Guys, I'm still living in Alberta here, and we're still can't do anything. Like no kids sports, restaurants are closed. We're not like locked down, like we can't leave our house, but schools just went back today. So like we've been doing homeschooling the whole bit. So like to go down there was like a breath of fresh air. I was like, it was freedom to go to Texas and go to a restaurant and kind of live a normal life. As far as the hockey's concerned, I really feel bad for all the kids across not even the NHL drafts, just kids in general. Like they haven't played hockey all year in Ontario. Depending on what part of the world you're from, and pick your sports. This isn't limited to hockey. And so for all those kids, those top players to get the opportunity to play together and against the best players, I'm sure they were excited. And then the tournament ended up being really good because, it gets all those best players together, draft eligible players. And, you can see them all with and against each other. And normally you'd have, you know, your Hlinka tournament in August, and then there'd be one in November, and then one in February, and then this one in April. It's really, it's the only one because all the other ones were canceled. So in that regard, it was good hockey and exciting to watch.
Are you going to be going to the Erie PA showcase that they have scheduled for all the OHL players?
I personally am not, but they have, yes, we have guys from the east side, scouts from the east that will be going. Part of the reason is the border, right? So you got to do, if you cross the border and I come back to Canada, I got to do a 2-week quarantine, which I did after Texas. And it's not super exciting to sit in your house for 2 weeks when you have 3 kids too. So yeah, my wife, I got a good wife, guys.
Yeah, and he told me he was going to Texas, like for the under-18s. And I saw that they kind of won, so I decided to congratulate him on kind of winning. For some reason, I thought that he went down there part of the coaching staff. And then, of course, I Googled the coaching staff, and Colin Fraser's name's not there. So I'm like, oh, crap. And then I went to the USA one, thinking, like, oh, my God, I really hope he's not on the U.S. team. Because the U.S. finished, like 6th or 7th. And that's like, I'm sorry, a long story short, I didn't ask, I assumed, and it was very embarrassing, and that's all I wanted to share.
It's all good. I was there for work. I was rooting for Canada, though, just because I'm Canadian. So I always have a little bit of pride for Canada, but I was there representing the Blackhawks, though. So.
Okay. And I want to let everyone know, since my colleagues are Americans and my wife's American, I'm wearing a Team USA, so.
All right. I'll let it slide this time.
Yes, I'm not anti-Canadian.
But he is a Boston Red Sox fan, guys, so.
Oh, come on, Scott. 2004.
So, Colin, you know, we've been rapid-firing these questions at you, but we also do have a couple of listener questions. Would you be willing to stick around and answer a couple for us?
Absolutely. Yep. Happy to.
Beautiful. All right. So our first question is from our loyal listener, Richard Sarabia, who, and I tell this story every single episode, his Twitter name is Dirty Harry.
Oh, perfect. Love it. All right. It is. Dirty Harry, awesome. Here we go.
And you know what? You're going to love this question too. So his question is, and he wants to know, did you drink any alcohol out of the cup? And if you were able to drink out of it again, what would you choose?
With the first part of the question, absolutely. Yes.
Attaboy.
1,000 times over. And you know what? We were doing anything. Name the alcohol. We were drinking Jager bombs out of this thing. And I don't even remember. I was so young. I don't even. We drink anything out of this thing. And my kids would have, we had cereal. We had chocolate milk. We had, name it. Maybe even ice cream out of the thing. Anything you want. Anything goes. What would I choose? I suppose I'm a beer guy, really. I'm a craft beer guy. I can't pick a certain kind, but I like a pale ale. So that's what I would choose to drink out today. And I'd probably sip it versus like pounding it like I'm never going to have one ever again.
Yeah, I was going to say, you didn't remember because you were so young. I was like, it was because you were so young? Really?
That's right.
It's your story. We'll keep it at that. Right? Yes. I'm just kidding. But we got another one here from Scott Coleman, and he wants to know, when you reflect on your career as a player, what do you cherish the most? Is it the friendships built, the cups won, or something else?
Well, that's a good question. I said one thing. Now that I'm scouting, you know, we watch all these kids from all over the planet, and we bring them together for a draft, and we, you know, make our best educated guess. And at the end of the day, there's only 700 guys approximately that get a play in the NHL, and we all can't beat Connor McDavid and Anze Kopitar and Drew Doughty. When I was a player, I always wanted to play more. Oh, why can't I move up a line? Oh, what can I do to play more? And now that I'm an old man and I reflect back, I'm proud of the career that I had and how I hung around. To narrow it down to one, geez, I don't know. I mean, I suppose it's the friendships and the stories you have along the way. I mean, lots of guys you're friends with, but you lose connection with just because it's hard to keep in contact with all these guys. But then when you see them again, it's like nothing's ever, you never missed a beat. And the friendships and the stories and the I guess the things you got to do together would be it for me.
Do you still keep in contact with any of the former Kings players that you won the cup with?
Yeah, I mean, the odd time here, Matt Green's a pro scout with the Kings, so I'd say more text messages than actual phone conversations. And Kyle Clifford, me and Cliffy were pretty tight, so when he beat someone's face in, I like to send him a message every now and then, because I played with him on my wing, and he was fun to play with because he's tough. He's a badass guy, man. He's awesome. So
Colin, I'd like to remind you, you're born 1985, right? You're born January of 85. I was born October of 82. So, so I just wanted to say, whenever you call yourself an old man, it kind of makes him feel a bit older. So just, you know.
Well, I got all these grays coming in, guys. So
I got so many grays, yeah.
Cliffy's still a young man. Cliffy's definitely not old. Let's put it that way. So
that's true. He's not.
Guys, when Cliffy was a rookie in the league, you know, I was like, eyes are like, he like looks like really like scary and mean, you know? And I'd been in the league 3 or 4 years. I was playing with Edmonton, and he lined up on the wing and he asked me to go. And I just kind of looked at him. I'm like, nah, man, I'm good. And then when I played with him, I'm like, oh, thank God I didn't.
It's kind of like looking at Kane from WWE, right? I mean,
oh yeah, he's scary, man. When he turns that, flips that switch. I sat with Cliffy on the airplane all the time, so he's a really nice guy until he flips the switch and watch out. So
yeah. Just one last question before we let you go here. What were some of your favorite cities to play in on the road?
I really like Vancouver because I'm from there. But their arena is really nice. Like, it has a really good atmosphere. They do a really good pregame show, but more so because I was from the suburbs of Vancouver. So it's kind of like a homecoming, like lots of fans, family and friends in the seats. I really like Joe Louis in Detroit. Same kind of like just character, you know, like the boards weren't even like level. They're like kind of like crooked, and like, it was just like, and the benches were really small, and the dressing room sucked, but it was like lots of like character in it, you know, like in Detroit, we always had good games against Detroit. I mean, they're a good team. I wouldn't say Detroit was the best city, but it was a cool arena to play in. And there's obviously like New York, like always cool to go to New York. Just because it's New York City. Chicago, you can't beat the atmosphere in Chicago at a Blackhawks game. I mean, that's pretty tough to duplicate. To get excited for those games is pretty easy. Those would be the top ones. I mean, I really like Nashville. Like Nashville, I was there for my draft, so like it's become this like, oh, Nashville's a really cool city. And I'm like, guys, I've known this since 2003. I knew Nashville's cool before everybody else knew it was cool. So that's a really good. I like country music, right? So, and I like beers, so you go for live music. That's a good one. That's, as far as off ice is concerned, I mean, that's a great city, that one.
Nice. Do you wish Vegas was in when you were playing?
Oh, that'd be nice, right? I don't know. That'd be trouble, I think. Yeah. You know, Vegas is a different – it's almost too much for me now that I'm an old man, okay, Ryan? Now that I'm an old man. It's.
I won't hold against
him. Yeah, all right. That would be – you know what, though? That would be a great place to play. I mean, you look at their fans. I don't know if you guys watch them on TV, but, like, the show they put on and the fans, they got a good following there and a good support. And I think Seattle will be good too. Seattle's a great city. I grew up in Vancouver. I was going down to Seattle all the time. We'd go to Mariners and stuff. And I think it'll be a great, great place for a hockey team. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what that Kraken mascot's going to look like.
Isn't the logo cool? I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, the logo's awesome. Really cool logo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
I mean, it's not as cool as the Blackhawks, guys, but I...
No, it is not. But
as Kings fans, we're going to have no comment on that. So
I got love for, I told you guys before we were on here, I got love for the Kings. You know, I was a guy that was really like, I was down, not down and out in life, but like down and out in my career. The story I told, broken foot, and the Kings gave me a chance, you know, like I didn't know what's going to happen. And Terry Murray And Dean Lombardi and Ron Hextall, they all kind of believed in me. And the guys were really good to me. The first day I walked in there with the group of guys, they kind of I just fit in really well. And they were really, because they were kind of like this group, kind of like the Hawks. I was kind of the outsider, you know, like they were this group that had like kind of come up together. And I felt welcomed right away. And it's a big reason why these teams win. Sounds cliche, but like good tight knit group of guys, Chicago and LA. It's true, 100% true. You want to put them together. So,
call one more thing. There are a lot of great hockey pictures, but this I have to say is if you can see it, it's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
That's an awesome picture.
Yeah. Good one, hey. That's my oldest. He's 10 now, but so you get the mini cup, like when you win. So I got that cup, that mini cup he's holding is the Hawks one. And then I actually reenacted it with my daughter, who would have been, I don't know, she would have been not even two, maybe a year and a half. So after we won in 14, my daughter was born in 12. So there's the same picture, same dog, same everything. And then it's my daughter, my son, and myself.
Oh, no, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you do get a mini cup for winning, huh? I didn't know that.
Yeah, you get a mini cup. Yeah, it's cool. The kids, that's what the kids are like. You know, I'm running around with the big one, and the kids are running around with the little one, you know? Yeah.
Keeps them occupied so they don't want yours, right?
Oh, man, we have mini stick games over this cup. Yeah, you know what I do now is I bring it to, like, my son plays hockey, right? So when they're in a tournament, it's like the final game. I'm like, all right, and here's the little mini cup. Or I run camps. We do like 3-on-3 games, and I bring the mini cup to like the rink for the 3-on-3 games and stupid stuff like that. So we have fun with it. Yeah.
Then you just got to hope nobody takes off with it, right? So no, well, I want it. It's fine. I'm out of here.
I know. I'm in a small town. I'll find you. So can't hide with that thing. It's got my name on it too.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Colin, thanks a million for coming on. We really appreciate you spending time with us and giving us all kinds of insight to, you know, just the hockey world. And it's been great talking to you.
No problem, guys. Yeah, thanks absolutely for having me. Yeah, yeah, anytime.
Thanks, absolutely. Colin.
Thanks, Colin.
Come back anytime. And good luck for the future, the rest of, you know, next season and beyond. So thank you very much, sir.
All right. Take care, guys.
All right, Colin. Take care. Right.
See ya.
Take it easy. All right. That was Colin Frazier. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was
really that awesome. Really was. I love that behind the scenes stuff, you know, that stuff that you just don't hear about every day and you know, like NHL Network or anything like that. So,
yeah, really those, cool. Those stories like inside the locker room or, you know, the broken foot story, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, especially being at a stag party when he gets a call from Ronnie Hextall, you know.
Hearing about the differences between Quenville and Sutter. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
And when you think about the coaches he's played with. I mean, those are two of the best.
Or one of the two guys that played for Darryl and one of his brothers.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, guys, the NHL playoffs are in full swing. We've already had some upsets and we've already had some surprises. So, let's go around the table and just get some general thoughts. Ryan Sykes, what do you think? What's the biggest surprise to you so far?
I know Manny's listening, but I thought Florida was going to not have to come back this much, if I'm being honest. I didn't think I should have. I mean, but I didn't think that Nikita Kucherov's impact, you know, had this much of a, you know, a dynamic on the team.
He sure healed from that injury pretty fast, huh?
Yeah. There were a lot of memes and stuff when he first was placed on long-term injured reserve. You know, he's going to – the Undertaker coming out of the cats.
Oh, that's like the main one you see all over Twitter. It was great.
It's like, so okay, that's what they – I mean, but this offseason, I don't know how they get around that, guys.
Yeah.
No, I have no idea, especially they got to re-sign Serge Dov. I mean, that's
I think
he, I think he's got one or two more years left.
Yeah, they gave him a three-year deal. Bad.
Oh yeah,
no, you're fine. But they got a boatload of restricted and unrestricted free agents. So
yeah, and a flat cap that's going to be tough to circumvent. any further. So
yeah,
I don't know if they'll be able to sit Kucherov or Stamkos for a full season on LTIR next year. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, not with an 82-game schedule. Yeah.
Yeah, that might be harder.
How about you, Russ? How about some of your thoughts?
Well, I mean, we just had the biggest surprise, I guess, of the season so far was the Jets sweeping the Oilers. I mean, I personally thought the Jets were a better team than everyone made them out to be. And it's a team that's not built for the regular season, but they're a playoff team. I mean, they're pretty strong down the middle when you have Scheifele and Blake Wheeler, and then you mix up and people are just calling Nikolaj Ehlers one of the best wingers in the Northern Division, which I don't disagree with. I mean, you watch him play and that guy just speeds around the ice and he's got a wicked shot. And we saw it in game three, and then you saw Kyle Connor produce in game four for the triple OT winners. The Oilers are just an enigma. I mean, we talk about Connor McDavid. He's obviously, I mean, I think the best player in the NHL. And then you put him with Leon Draisaitl. That's just a 1-2 punch that should be doing a lot better in the playoffs than they are. I mean, when you think about those two, you think about Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin back, almost 8 years ago. So it's just unfortunate that they're not able to find any more pieces to build around those guys. And I've always said they're just a top-heavy team. I mean, you look at their defense. Darnell Nurse played over 60 minutes in game four. But who else is there? I mean, they picked up Tyson Barrie, but he's not doing anything. And I don't know. There's just a lot of question marks in Edmonton. It'll be interesting to see if they're able to add to that roster in the offseason.
It was just kind of funny over the last two games. Like, every time Winnipeg would score, they would pan to Connor McDavid's face, and he would just look so defeated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's almost like, what more else can I do here? Like, I need some help. I mean, but going back to game three, I mean, that big 4-1 comeback, it was funny. I was watching the game in the third period, and then they scored that second goal. The Jets scored that second goal, and I was like thinking, like, oh, man, I just don't see it, them coming back. And then all of a sudden they scored the third one. I'm like, oh, they're going to win this game. You just saw the momentum and the Oilers just breaking down. And as Kings fans, I'm sure we can all appreciate some Edmonton Oiler fallouts. But it's just, you want to see a player of Connor McDavid's caliber kind of get exposed a little bit further in the NHL playoffs. So, I mean, I saw a video now. Stephen A. Smith from ESPN is now ragging on him. So,
Stephen A. Smith, you know, with hockey all of a sudden? Like,
yeah, I'm sure he doesn't know that much, but, for the growth of the sport, it's good to see.
Yeah, and I mean, I know we were all kind of clamoring for the Kings to make the playoffs this year, but you saw what Colorado did to the St. Louis. Like, do we really want that?
I think we're kind of better off.
Yeah, I'll take the top 10 draft pick.
Right.
Over a beating from that Habs team.
The Blues had trouble scoring. I'm not even sure we would have put up a goal.
I mean, personally, I could see them sweeping Vegas the way Vegas is playing right now. I mean, Vegas is just being carried by Mark Stone right now. So could the Avs be one of the first teams that go undefeated in the playoffs? Maybe.
They're so good.
I mean, and the problem is that team's built for the future too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Avs are the front runners for the cup. There's no doubt about that. But I think the bottom line is, as it always is with the playoffs, it's goaltending. And you know, just to touch back to Edmonton.
Wait, Scott, what was the third point?
Goaltender.
Hey, go ahead. I can repeat the second one.
Just check all the above. That's all. Okay. But I mean, going back to Edmonton, you know, I mean, and I respect everything that Ken Holland has done over the years, but you would have thought that after last season, when they were bounced by the Blackhawks in that the play-in round, whatever you wanted to call it, and it was primarily because their goaltending let them down. You mean to tell me you didn't go into that offseason saying, okay, this is the one place I got to improve this team, and I don't care what I got to do it.
Yeah, and I mean,
Mike Smith was okay. He was all right in, you know, his streaks during the season. But do you really want to go into a legit playoff run what's Mike Smith? Is he 38 now? 38-year-old Mike Smith.
39.
Mikko Koskinen just fell apart. 39.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, it seems like Dave Tippett kind of has some kind of bromance relationship with Mike Smith. I mean, Mike Smith, he showed some flash throughout the regular season. But yeah, it's just he can be a great goaltender, but then he just kind of thinks that he can just like kind of maneuver the puck however he wants, and he makes these kind of bad, really like eye-opening mistakes, and he's not really that consistent, solid goaltender that a player or Edmonton has really hasn't had in quite some time. So,
well, and also from the perspective of like most Kings fans, not most, but some Kings fans, like word association, you think of Mike Smith. What do you think of? You think of the 2012 conference final when he was with Arizona. You know, you kind of think about how great he was. It's, you know, of course we know, like, you know, I mean, 2012 doesn't seem that long ago, but when you really realize it, well, 2012 was 9 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're coming up to the 10-year anniversary of the Cup
yeah.
win. So, yeah, right. Time flies.
It's like an eternity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so Ryan Colley, is there any playoff series that you particularly caught your eye so far here? Or?
You know, I have personal teams that have, like former Kings. I know I'm a bit of a homer, but like Jack Campbell with the Leafs, I'm really no. But the one team that has the most former Kings contingent is the aforementioned Winnipeg Jets. Trevor Lewis, Nate Thompson, Derek Forbert, associate coach Jamie Caban, who as soon as they won overtime, you know, I just sent him a text and congratulate him. I didn't do it before after game three, only because he's also a Red Sox fan, and both of us remember 1986. So, you know, don't congratulate until it's over. All joking aside, though, it's like, I mean, I knew the Jets could take the Oilers. He just had, like, I remember when they won the first two games, and then when Edmonton came out strong game three, I'm like, yeah, no surprise. Edmonton's way too good to be swept. Lo and behold, that's exactly what happened, right?
Yeah,
kind of like they with Columbus a couple of years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting to see Derek Forbert playing top line, top pair of minutes over there.
Yeah, top pair of minutes. Yeah.
You see Derek Forbert's playing top pair of minutes in Winnipeg. Alec Martinez playing top pair of minutes in Vegas. Jake Muzzin's playing top pair of minutes in Toronto.
Yeah.
Like, no, definitely. Maybe we should have kept all these guys together. I don't know. I'm not going to say that. But
no.
It's cool. It's cool to see. It's cool.
But Derek Forbert, especially because Kings drafted in 2010, and I don't think he played to like 2015. So it's not like, yeah. I mean, I could be wrong, but his time with the Kings, I think he was maybe on the top pair, maybe once or twice, and that was it.
I know he was paired with Doughty for quite some bit. Could you imagine if the Kings management decided to wait that long with some of the prospects now? I think we'd probably see a riot in L.A.
Can you imagine?
Our heads would collectively explode.
There's no, exactly.
Doughty's head would explode.
Yeah, Quinn was going to wait four more years.
You know, I tell you, though, guys, you know, for me, I mean, obviously the Winnipeg-Edmonton was just a complete, you know, surprise. And but I'm going to tell you something. You know what else really surprised me was the way Boston just pretty much dismantled Washington.
Yeah, Washington.
I think, Washington.
I thought the that first game would be closer.
Yeah.
You know, and to see, and I know this has been kind of beat to death and all that, but I mean, to see Ovi having that meltdown after game four.
Yeah.
You know, screaming at Samsonov off. And I know there was like some behind the scenes stuff that went on with that too, but you know what? This could very well be the end of the line for Washington, because that roster isn't getting any younger, and they really don't have much in the prospect pipeline. So, and they're going to be in cap trouble because of basically with Backstrom's contract, Kuznetsov's contract, Carlson's contract, and of course Ovi's got to be resigned now.
Yeah.
I don't know, guys. You know, I thought maybe the Caps had one more old guard running them, but boy. What a difference a series makes, huh?
No, and don't get me wrong. I don't want to blame goaltending, but, like, I remember after the first two games, I know Craig Anderson's older, but he was playing very well. And then when Samsonov was available, they put him in. I'm like, why? And, you know, I'm not saying the goaltending change, like, was the reason for the downfall, but it seems a bit coincidental that once they made that change, it was all Boston.
Yeah, but you know what, though? Especially, like, with that game four, that, you know, obviously it ended the way it did with basically a mistake.
Yeah.
But Sadov was the only reason that that game went to double overtime. He was phenomenal.
True, yeah. Yeah.
He got no help whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's going to be interesting. But it's, you know, what's going to be even more interesting next season when our Kings are in the playoffs.
Yes.
Looking forward to that.
Yes. And another podcast can talk about our teams. Yes. So,
and the and the operative word when, not if.
That's right. Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Yeah.
So with that said, guys, I think we're going to wrap this episode up. Right now, it looks like the Toronto Maple Leafs are winning 4-0 with the game about to end. So they're going to go up 3-1.
Yep.
So there you go, Ryan. You're going to have some playoff hockey continuing in your hometown. So
yes, exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So anyways, we want to thank Colin Fraser once again for coming on and talking with us. That was a real good time. So for Ryan Sykes, for Ryan Cowley, and for Russell Morgan, I'm Scott Kinville. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on the Hockey Royalty Podcast.